Welcome to episode 299 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Elizabeth, Lindsay, Donna, and George. On episode 295, we talked about the advantages and disadvantages of using your phone as a vacation camera. Tonight, we're going to go over all the pros and cons of traveling with a DSLR camera and all its accessories, so let's get started. I'm loving these techie things because I'm actually kind of impressed that you guys know what you're talking about.
It sounds heavy to me. This just sounds heavy. So can you just address that to begin with?
Yep.
It is heavy.
It is. There's absolutely no way around it. I've been to Disney multiple times carrying a DSLR with a wide angle zoom on the camera and a 70 to 200 in a bag. And it's the price you pay. There's just no way around it.
Your pictures are awesome.
To me, the photography is as important as the food or the rides. So, yes. And
what you can do is you can cheat like I did. And mine's about 50 pounds. I think Josh actually weighed it one time and it was like 45 something pounds with all my lenses in it. I made him carry it around Europe. So you can totally get your own Sherpa.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if George could get away with that.
No, my wife wouldn't go for that.
What is a DSLR camera? Can you explain how that's different from the like Samsung Galaxy camera my dad lent me when I went to Alaska?
Basically, what do all those letters mean?
Yeah, okay, so it's pretty simple. In the old days, they were just SLRs, which stands for single lens reflex, which means the camera had one lens instead of the old twin lens cameras that you kind of looked down in and held them at waist level. And the reflex just means there's a mirror inside that flips up out of the way. And then when they became digital, somebody threw the D in front and they became digital single lens reflex cameras. That's about all there is to the abbreviation there.
So I want to ask a really quick question about that because I've been looking at these and there's mirrorless, which is a little bit lighter. Is it like a huge, I mean, would you go to a mirrorless camera or is that just a huge no-no because it just destroys your art?
No, if I was not involved in anything right now, I'm actually looking at a mirrorless. Mirrorless are the next wave. Yep. They're one of the disadvantages of a DSLR is if you shoot video, they will not autofocus because they focus through the viewfinder. And when the mirror flips up, the viewfinder is not accessible and the camera stops focusing. So with mirrorless, you don't have that problem. They will continue to autofocus as you're shooting video. So those are the wave of the future, and those are the cameras that all of the high-end camera companies, Sony, Nikon, and Canon at this point are producing.
Panasonic?
You're such an early adopter, George. I love that.
Panasonic is and it isn't. Panasonic is one of those kind of, I guess you'd call them a fringe brand. I don't know that they make a ton of lenses, and that was one of the topics that we will discuss, that people spend thousands of dollars on the body, and then they chintz out on lenses, and you really need to do it the other way around. Spend less on the body and the most money on the glass, because that's really what's most important.
Well, I can tell you from experience, I dropped my camera and it had the original like Canon lens, and I replaced it with a generic lens, and it just doesn't focus as fast. So if I'm shooting something that's like a bird or an animal or something, I can't pick it up unless they're sitting there.
So you're saying when you look at these prices, because it's not a cheap hobby, people.
No.
It's not.
No, it's not.
So when when you're looking at these prices, you're saying they're worth it. You're saying that that price is actually like worth something. Is that correct?
It's like saying I want to buy a car. Is a Ferrari worth it? I guess it depends on who's buying it and what are you going to do with it. So if you're an average consumer and you're shooting a couple of vacations a year and your kids' birthday parties is $3,000 for a camera and a lens a little too much? Yeah, probably. But for those of us that just are really into it and shoot all the time, nope. I hate to do it, but I do it.
I'm happy you can do it for $3,000 now, because it was not that long ago that it was $5,000 or $10,000 to get a hold of any of these, the cameras that can do these kind of things. Now, George, are you a Canon person? Because I'm a Canon girl.
I am Canon now. I started off, I actually used to shoot Minolta back in the old film days. Yeah, when they were still around. Yeah.
Me too.
And then I switched. Actually, I shot Pentax when I was shooting weddings because I was shooting medium format and they had one of the better medium format cameras. And then I switched to Fuji because I really liked the Fuji bodies at the time. And yeah, then I wanted full frame. So I switched over to the Canons and I've been with them ever since. And I don't see myself switching again. Once you get invested in glass, it's too hard to swap brands again.
Now, have you done any of the Tamron lenses, like the step-down lenses?
I did.
That's the one I bought to pull for
place. That was the most expensive lesson I've ever learned in my life.
Yeah, because it's funny. So you look at the Canon 70 to 200, and it's $2,200. And I can get a Sigma for $1,100. I'm like, it's got all the same specs. In the past, I did. I bought Sigma lenses, and one of them just refused to focus after a while. It wouldn't focus, and I can't remember what was wrong with the other one. So I stopped. But recently, I follow a lot of YouTube photographers, and Sigma has released a new trying to remember what they call it. It's a new line. It's a better line, and they get really good reviews, and they're still quite a bit less than the Canon or Nikon glass. They're just, prices are crazy. And they make more than one line.
You say glass.
I'm sorry. Lenses. Yes.
Okay. Just making sure I understood
you. But can you talk a little bit about the holy trinity of lenses? What are the different, you have three different ones listed here. Yep. And I don't know anything about any of
them. So, it's all numbers and letters.
Terms. Break it down for the
So I just beginners. Covered focal length. I didn't bother to even deal with aperture or f-stop because that's a whole nother conversation. But what you're trying to do is get the best quality lens you can that will cover the most range in the least number of lenses. So you're not carrying eight lenses around all the time. So usually a super wide angle, so 15 to 35 is a wide angle out to almost standard, which is what 50 millimeters is. 50 is what we always considered your eye was 50 millimeters. So anything above 50 made things appear closer. Anything lower made them appear farther away and at a wider angle. So if you were to get a 15 to 35, a 35 to 80 millimeters, which is slight telephoto, and then a 70 to 200, which is extreme telephoto, you covered most everything you could need for most situations with three lenses. It helps keep the cost down, helps keep the weight down.
If you were going on an African safari, these are the three you would take?
Yeah. I would probably take a 15 to 35 and a 70 to 200, and I may skip the middle range because I'm going to want wide angle panoramas in the 15 to 35, or I'm going to want close ups of the wildlife with a 70 to 200. And in fact, on an African safari, I may go as far as rent like a 500
for
something. I want to get really close in some lions or zebras or something, and having that huge lens.
I had an iPhone. Do not recommend.
One thing I can say about this is if you have all these lenses and you are going somewhere like on an African safari or something, I can guarantee from personal experience, whatever lens you leave at home, we really wish that you had.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Well, that is always the way it is. Like, photography is such a, it's almost like you have to, I want to just cut down some weight. This is not
talk about that weight.
Well, I'm partial to the macro lens too.
Some people love that. Yeah. I don't shoot a whole lot of close-ups of bugs or flowers or anything like that, but yeah, macros, if you're going to shoot that kind of stuff, are great.
I'm so surprised, bugs George. And flowers kind of guy.
So let's talk about the weight. So let's assume you're going on this African safari and you're going to take your camera and just those two lenses. You said you're going to cut out that middleman, right? And I'm assuming you're going to take a tripod. Yep. Mm-hmm. Although on the Jeeps, you're not going to need it, but in some places you may want, like when you stop and want to get a Savannah.
Well, you can't touch that. You can't touch the 200 or 500 without it. Okay. Like, really, you need that stabilization. None of us can actually hold that. I don't think, George, I mean, maybe you've had different experience, but for me personally, I can't get the quality picture that I want holding the bigger lenses.
A lot of people can't, and that's one of the new features that are coming in, mostly the mirrorless, or what we call IBIS, which is in-body image stabilization. So the new cameras actually will help stabilize those long lenses for longer exposures. In the past, the image stabilization was built into the lens. Now they're built into the bodies as well. So you can get some really sharp images on longer lenses without holding them. But for me personally, I tend not to travel with a tripod, but I do bring a monopod.
Oh, where you just sort of stick it in the ground.
So I don't have to deal with those.
Like a big selfie stick, basically. Yeah.
Yep. Especially. Yeah, unfortunately, because I tried to take it to Disney and they gave me a hard time because they thought it was a selfie stick. I said, except the camera goes on the end you hold, not the other end. And he didn't buy that.
Yeah. So you've got your camera, your two lenses, because you've cut it down, and your monopod, and honestly, a lot of times you're on a Jeep when you see these animals, I can tell you from experience. So if you can't hold that lens, it may not be worth, I mean, you know. So how much does this weigh? We're not even counting the backup battery and any of that. How much is this?
Okay, so here's the part where we didn't cover battery, which is f-stop. So let's say in a 70 to 200 lens, you can get that in what we call f2.8 or f4. So the advantage to an f2.8 is the lens opens wider, lets in more light. So you tend to get a faster shutter speed and the images are going to be a little sharper. In order to do that, the glass is quite a bit wider. So that lens is going to weigh not quite twice, but probably 50% more than the F4 lens would be. Ooh. So if you're buying these big lenses at fast speeds, you could be talking 4 or 5 pounds a lens, plus the body, spare batteries. Yeah, it gets to be heavy by the end of the day.
Kind of like those big ones that you see at football games.
You think of batteries like you think about money. You know how we say when you travel, take half as much stuff as you think you're going to need and twice as much money. You need to take twice as many batteries as you think you're going to need. And that really is not just for DSLRs. That's for any photography equipment, whether it's your GoPro or whatever. Yeah. You need more battery.
Okay, so let's
talk
about this like RAW versus JPEG, because you mentioned it in our iPhone episode recently. So it's time for you to nerd out and explain what this is, because I had never heard of RAW. I, of course, heard of JPEG because I'm alive and I'm over the age of two. So,
yeah. So the first thing to note is that not all DSLRs shoot RAW. Some of the lower end, what we would call consumer cameras, just don't have that as an option. So if your camera does have the option of RAW, personally, that's the only thing I shoot in. In fact, I made a big mistake on my last Disney trip. I was having some problems with the camera and did a factory reset and forgot that when I do a factory reset, it resets it to JPEG. And I shot my entire vacation in JPEG. And when I got home and went to convert them, I wasn't a happy guy at all. But
so one thing, George, so shooting in RAW, from my experience, is that it takes up so much more space.
Huge.
How many memory cards do you travel with? Because I used to travel 10.
I carry 4 or 5, but I tend to get the absolute biggest ones I can. So I think I get 128 gig cards. As big as I can get.
And now you can. I mean, I found some of my old ones that were like, you thought 5 or 10 was big or whatever, you know, whatever. And you thought it was such a big thing back then. But
so then is that part of your bedtime routine then? You offload all those pictures every day so that you have those clean cards to start the next day? Or is it not necessary? Is that big enough?
No, I just tend to I just tend to bring a lot of cards.
Okay.
So I don't have to do that because unfortunately they take them off the card. They suck up the space on your laptop too. And I don't have a gigantic hard drive. So I've always gone by
time. Or it used to be
it, oh yeah. It can take a while to transfer all those raw images off a card onto a computer. Yeah. So that's another thing about the workflow is time.
And that's one of the reasons why I stopped shooting with RAW. So I want to ask you this question because I really found myself, I never got to the step where I was doing anything with my pictures that I really should have been doing, shooting all that RAW and taking all that footage and then going back in. So what do you do? What is your process, George? Enlighten us.
And tell us what RAW is because you still haven't covered that. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, right. Sorry.
So RAW is basically the camera giving the image exactly as it sees it on the sensor, along with all of the metadata, the lens you used, what f-stop you were, what focal length you were, all of that information gets sent to the card along with RAW, along with a JPEG. So that the image you see on the back of the camera is actually the JPEG because it's not capable of showing the RAW either. So it stores all those things on the card uncompressed, there's no white balance applied to it. It's just exactly as the sensor saw it. So
that sounds huge.
It's like the painting. It is huge. Yes. But
it's the closest to film, like pure.
Yeah. It's the closest to is slide film.
Oh yeah.
Because slide film, the way you shot it was the way it came out. You couldn't increase the exposure or decrease it in printing. It was either right or it wasn't. And that's why a lot of people didn't shoot slide film because you had to be really good and your exposure had to be on. So yeah, that's in a way that's like RAW, except it's almost the exact opposite because RAW, once you pull it into the computer, it gives you the most flexibility. So if I accidentally left my camera on a tungsten setting, which is what your indoor house lights are, if you don't adjust it, you notice they all come out nice and orange. So if I had accidentally left that on and went outside and shot, all my images are going to be this funky blue tone. With RAW, it doesn't apply any color balance. I can change it on the fly to whatever it was when I shot it. So RAW's like slides, but it's actually the complete opposite at times where I can do almost anything to it. And if you over underexpose it, it's going to have the most leeway because it has the most wide color range on the card from the sensor that JPEG doesn't have because it doesn't have as many colors. So an 8-bit JPEG image, I looked this up earlier, has 16.8 million colors, whereas a 12-bit RAW has 68 billion. So that shows you how many more colors the camera's going to capture in RAW mode that you, if your software is able to handle it, you have the ability to play with.
Okay, first of all, my dad was a chemist and he explained color to me. And it's mind-blowing. But also, does this mean that you literally edit every picture you take?
Oh, yes.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, nothing. I never post anything that I... Yeah, nothing's unedited ever.
That's a lot of work. Like, that's a lot of work.
No. Well, every image gets...
So much work, Elizabeth. So much work.
And if you're shooting RAW, so first you need something like Adobe... what is it that I use? No, it's not Photoshop, but it's Lightroom. And what that does is it allows me to see the RAW image and play with it. And then once I do some basic things and rename the files, then I can pull them into Photoshop and do all the extra work to them. So yeah, on a really good edited images, I may spend an hour on each one, tweaking color balance and sharpening and cloning out stray clouds and hairs and... Yeah.
Okay, so one, you need a life, and two, so this ends up as a JPEG, is what you're saying. Yes. Yeah, that's a yes.
I prefer not to. Yeah. In most cases, yes, JPEG's just the easiest to work with. Otherwise, I use PNG, or I'd love to post TIFF, but they have the same problem as RAW. The file sizes are enormous. So, yeah, usually it ends up as a JPEG.
It sounds like these pictures would be the kind you would turn into like a canvas that, you know, like something that you're going to blow up or put on your wall, you know, like
20 by 24s or big.
You know what I think would be a fun challenge? I think we should do like a Lindsay versus George, like cell phone versus DSLR, and just see, you know, like.
Well, he would get me, and I would have to pull out my DSLR if we were going to blow it.
No.
Because you can, even without a camera, you can tell from your pictures that you take with your cell phone. You can't. I mean, you put them on your iPad, and all of a sudden it's distorted. You know, it's just not the same at all.
Like literally the best picture ever taken of us as a family because it captures like our personalities that we took in Paris in Versailles Garden, and I've blown it up on a canvas that's, I mean, it's not even that big. It's maybe 1 foot by 2 foot. And it's a little grainy. I mean, it passes and I can hang it on the wall and people are like, that's great because it shows our personality, but it's grainy and there's nothing I could have done about that. I mean, it's a cell phone camera.
Elizabeth, there's something you can do. You can get in touch with an artist who can take your actual picture and turn it into a real canvas and paint those details in that, unfortunately, because you weren't shooting with a
camera. And this is a service that was halfway through. So the canvas we used, it was like they do some post-processing for you, but at some point there's only so much you can do. So, and so I do agree. I think that but that's the thing. For me, I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to blow up this picture, click, click, but there's no way I'm going to go through 100 pictures from a vacation and edit every one. So George, do you literally go through every one or nope, nope, nope. Okay. I'll work on this one. Nope, nope, nope. I'll work on this one.
Yep. So my workflow is I import all the images into Lightroom, which is basically just a big gallery software. And I just quickly look through each one and I check red or blue. And then I go back and all the ones I checked red are ones that I thought looked good. And I'll go back and check them again. And then I narrow it down. So realistically, if I shoot 250 images, I'm looking for 5 to 10 good ones. And the rest are all just throwaways.
That's a really good indication of what photography is, because how many hours did you take to take those thousands of films? Spent hours and hours of editing and looking through, and then you get 5.
But at the same time, you have a lot of choices.
Really,
you have a lot of choices. And it's not like back in the old days, as you said on the previous episode, Lindsay, when we're talking about, you know, point and pray versus point and shoot. And you know, you hope that they come back decent, because that's the thing. It sounds like, oh gosh, that's terrible. You took 100 pictures and you're going to keep 5, but how many times did you get 32 exposures back from the developer? And you're like, here's 2 that I'm going to actually keep.
Yeah. You get your shoes and the wall and the ceiling and somebody's thumb or finger, or it was a really good picture except for the corner of the
photographer,
which you can't.
Oh, I literally saw my grandfather with a disposable camera. He had it turned around and he took a picture of his like eyeball.
Good.
We're like, oh, that'll be a good one.
That's great. I can't wait to get that one back. So George, you do all this, and then what do you do after that? Like, after you have these pictures, are you an actual follow-through person? Because I am not. I haven't printed out a picture since the invention of digital.
I can tell you I haven't printed an image in years, really. Everything's online. And Instagram, if you're listening, we'd really like to be able to upload from our PC and not only from our phone. So get with the program.
The only person, you're probably like one of 8 guys
I will add to that. I think any photographer, and I'm not a photographer, but sometimes you don't want to do it from your phone. Sometimes you want to do it from home where you're like, oh, here's a good picture. I'd like to put it on Instagram. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, I guess I did know that Instagram is made to be using on your phone.
Developed for like in the moment instance. It's supposed to be real life, not highly edited.
That is not how people use it.
I know. People put the filters on and the deer ears or whatever the heck they have, the flower towel.
what is your workflow like? You know, from packing your bags to going on vacation to coming back and processing. Do you have a plan? Do you do all this all at once, or do you do it over time? Do you come back and download things, and then every night for 2 months you look at stuff? Like, what's your general? What's the way you go about this?
Oh yes, you don't want to put your lenses in your checked bags.
I spend 2 days packing because I bring my DSLR body, I bring the monopod, I bring a small, like, gorilla pod that's real flexible so I can clamp the camera onto railings and stuff like that. I always bring, I'm actually bringing a 4K video camera lately too, because my DSLR doesn't shoot 4K yet. And then lately I've been also bringing a GoPro for an action camera.
I like how he's embarrassed about the extra cameras.
So I'm bringing, three cameras, multiple lenses, batteries for all of them, cords for all of them, chargers for all of them. So my backpack must weigh 60 pounds by the time I get it to the plane.
So that's all in your carry-on? Everything.
I'll swap cards. Yeah. That's all in my carry-on.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Do you have any underwear in your carry-on? Like, what if you're Donna? What if they lose your pass? Underwearless?
I don't know. Wearing the camera.
I want to hear this. Because when I was taking my stuff everywhere with me, I would spend so much time worrying about all that stuff that I would forget things, not like underwear, but I have forgot like other things that were important and end up without my contact lenses or something. But there's such a pressure to get it all that it fits in your carry-on with whatever else you're taking, if you're taking a laptop or anything like that, because you can't check any of this. This is not, you can't put this equipment under the plane. It's going to get broken or stolen or whatever. You can't do it. So it has to fit in your carry-on. And that was a major stressor for me in moving to a mid-range and then and beyond because of that. So I'm just in awe of, like, he's probably spends, and of course George is a guy, so he probably spends 2 days packing his camera equipment and like 5 minutes packing.
Maybe an hour packing clothes. Yeah.
Okay, so then you have it all packed and you go on vacation. How much time are you spending taking pictures versus actually experiencing your vacation?
They're not the same.
That's fair.
That's fair. That's a good point, because it really is for people who enjoy the photography and who enjoy being in that moment. And that could be the joy 100%. That you get on your vacation, is capturing these memories in a way that, you know, should your kids want a, 80 by 100 canvas of this moment.
And it's different for me based on the type of vacation. So Disney, I almost always have the DSLR with me around my neck, ready to go. It's always on, because you never know what you're going to run into. So they're a little bit different. I start looking for parade routes and places to stand for shows early so I can get a good spot. So they're much more work than a cruise or an all-inclusive. So all-inclusives, I may spend one morning and one evening just walking around the resort, taking lifestyle scenery shots when the sun's the best. And then normally one day I will do a full walking tour of the resort video and narrate what I see and where I am and what the pools look like and the different restaurants and that kind of stuff. And cruises, I always say that I'm going to, and I always find that I wait too long, and by the end of the cruise I'm so wiped out I just don't feel like walking the whole ship again. So cruises, that's my one thing. I would love to shoot more. I did probably shoot the most in Alaska because it was just more to take pictures of than I usually do in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing a snorkeling excursion or sailing or something, I'm not bringing the camera with me. Not taking that chance.
That is the one place I've gone that I've regretted not bringing my DSLR, not schlepping it with me, was Alaska. So not having that equipment there to be able to get those shots was
the first time I regretted not having an actual camera, since I had an actual camera like decades ago, was Africa. That said, our friend Robin, who owns an African safari company, is going to Tanzania at the end of this year. And he told me he's only taking a cell phone because he's tired of dropping his lenses on this gorilla trek and he doesn't want to keep up with them. But I'll be curious how he feels about that, because honestly, I mean, I got some good photos, but I would have gotten a lot better photos had I had like a real camera. So
George talked about those lenses you might want to bring and stuff, but one good point that we need to address, is it's a big issue, is changing those lenses, because your sensor is so vulnerable when you change your lenses. And I ran into this issue in Egypt where everything, there was sand and dust everywhere in the air, and you can't, there was no safe place for me to go to change my lenses and to get out. So that's another thing is you, when you're at the hotel setting up for the day, make sure you have, you're in one of those environments. Like I would say, even in Africa, especially if you're going out to shoot the gorillas, you need to have the lens that you want on, because trying to mess around with that and change it in the middle, I'm sure there are going to be experienced photographers who listen to this and go, well, I can do it with one hand tied behind my back and I can do it. Well, that's, I've never been that person. I cannot do it with one hand. It's quite the production. So George, have you ever run into the instance where the parade's coming and you've got your wide angle lens on because you were shooting a close up of your family, but now you really want a telephoto because you want to get that shot of Mickey and Minnie up in the hot air balloon. I swapped the lens. You swap the lens.
Disney World is so dusty.
Don't care. What most people don't understand is the lower end DSLRs really don't have any kind of rubber seals in them. So if you're in a dusty environment, you're screwed anyway, because they're going to be all clogged up. They really are. They're just not made for that.
Yeah.
The higher end gear tend to have, their titanium bodies are not plastic. They have rubber seals in them. The sensor, yeah, it's going to get dusty. You just go back to the room, hit the sensor clean function, and blow on it with a bulb sprayer and try to clean off as much of the dust as you can and just keep shooting. That's what Photoshop's for. Get rid of those dust speckles.
So back to...
Yeah. There's nothing frustrating more than having that one little dust speck on like the perfect picture.
That would be the clone tool.
So back to your Africa trip then, would you rent a better body for the trip because you're going someplace that's dustier or dirtier?
You could. I don't rent bodies, but I've rented lenses multiple times because I just can't afford a $5,000 lens, but I can afford to rent one for a week. So I do that. They come insured as part of the rental agreement. So you have insurance on the lens in case you lose it. They cover shipping both ways. Yeah. You could rent the whole thing. They rent bodies and lenses. So if you're doing this once in a lifetime trip and you really want a good camera and you don't want to buy one, rent one. Mm-hmm. They're out there.
And rent it early so you can learn how to use it.
If you rent it, you don't know what you're doing.
A college course to try and learn some of these cameras. I mean, I've had mine for years and I'm sure it can do things that I didn't even know it could do. So the other thing, George, you talked about like they have the insurance. What are the things that you do to keep your camera safe when you're traveling? Do you do anything extra to kind of safeguard your equipment?
I bought a DSLR bag. So my backpack is made for a camera. It's got the pouches in the right places so I can put a DSLR with a long lens on it in the bag without having to take it apart. It's got extra padding in certain areas. I never leave it out of my sight for one. If I'm not holding it, my wife's holding it. Never leave it on the ground. And I actually, 2 years ago, I bought insurance because I actually, all right, here comes the geek. I bought a drone too. Because I thought I need to be able to go to the resorts. I need to go to the resorts and be able to shoot from the air. So I need a drone. I insured all my camera equipment and the drone with a personal article policy. So lost or theft, it's covered.
Through your homeowners.
Yeah, it's kind of through my homeowners. Yeah.
I said that's got to help your peace of mind because I probably should have done that. I never did that. And I was always constantly worried. That was my biggest worry was, do I leave it in the hotel? It's not going to fit in the safe. What do I do? I lock it in my suitcase. What do I do with this big giant backpack of camera? And then I'm taking my clothes out and setting my clothes in like inconspicuous places to make room in my suitcase to lock up my camera bag of equipment, which I'm sure in that 5-cent lock really wasn't that safe to begin with.
So what I'm getting out of this is, if photography is not your number one goal on a trip, use your cell phone.
Yep.
But if photography is your...
Or a mid-size. You don't have to do either or. They are, like, he mentioned Fuji before. I found a really great compromise in a Fuji camera that I could swap out the lenses, and it was kind of like the in between, but it was still portable enough where you're not taking up too much space. You know, that's a kind of a good compromise between the two. Now, will you still, if you're like George, you might still get frustrated if you don't have that right lens to get the shot. I mean,
that's where the Panasonics that you mentioned, Elizabeth, come in. They're a good quality camera. They have great features. They're reasonably priced. They're not pro level, but the people that buy those probably aren't looking for that either.
That's where I was focused because I needed something that was light and mirrorless, but could take a lens if it needed to, but didn't have to. So yeah, that was exactly where I ended up.
And most people just want a point and shoot. They want something with a somewhat of a zoom, and they want a point and shoot. And so you can get away with a small zoom lens and a body, and you can take really good pictures just doing that.
And that's honestly part of what I like about my phone camera is it's pretty idiot-proof. I mean, there's a few settings on it, but for the most part, it takes care of all that thinking for you. And that's where DSLR has become very intimidating. So it really does sound like DSLRs are for somebody who is a hobbyist, at least to a minimal degree. I mean, you don't have to be a George. You don't have to be I'm going to edit every single photo I take because I think, and it seems like that might be a difference, is when I go on vacation, I'm more interested in the experience and less interested in the photographs. Although I get home and I'm all pissed off because I don't have enough photographs, but that's my own fault.
I mean, because I've got a couple hundred thousand I've never done anything with. So
honestly, and my husband takes way more photographs than I do. Again, not a photographer, doesn't have a fancy camera, but I love traveling with people who take pictures because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get some pictures from this so I don't have to take them. But at the same time, it's very intriguing because I see DSLR camera, the results of it, and it's pretty powerful.
I do think you kind of need to take a little time to learn it, though. Otherwise, you are better off at the point and shoot. Learn the power of it.
So what I suggest is actually going and taking a photography class. If you really want to learn how to do it and do it well, take a photography class, because f-stops and aperture settings and flashes and not flashes and fills and all those kind of other things, it would be in your best interest to learn what those things mean.
And sometimes you can do that in your destination. So I know on the iPhone class we talked about, when Lindsay and Sandy went to Fairbanks and they took pictures of the Northern Lights, and they had two different situations where one was like no cell phones and the other was like, well, if you're going to use your cell phone, here's how to download an app where you can actually see something. So did you guys feel like those classes were good beginner classes for learning to use a camera?
And I've taken other photography classes too, like in downtown Anchorage or in any city. It really, you can find one for usually less than $100. And it's not only a great way to get to know your equipment, they'll help you, most of the time they'll help you set your equipment up for whatever the conditions are you're shooting in, but they'll also show you that you get an overview of the area. It's kind of like we said, doing ghost tours is a really good idea to learn the area. Anytime you go to a new area, if you do a tour the first night, it's a great idea. And if you want to take pictures, if that's your focus, a photography tour is a really great idea. One thing I will mention about security, because I have had this happen, unfortunately, is I did not, when I first started, invested all this money in my equipment, I didn't put my name, phone number, and email address on all of my memory cards. And I have lost memory cards. I'm sure everybody has, but it's so heartbreaking because you lose your vacation photos, these once in a lifetime things. So put your contact info on every single thing that you purchase. You never know.
They're so tiny.
You can print it on a label and stick the label on it. You can get QR codes now. QR code sticker. And most people will go out of their way to return it.
If they know where to go.
If they know.
Exactly. Yes. I've got memory cards with pictures of lovely people, but what do you do with them?
All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Donna, George, Lindsay, Elizabeth, and myself, Sandy, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.